I'm trying to tell my children that that's what they can do. I'm like, you know, you, it's really bad to say this, but I'm like, you probably don't want to work for someone. If you want to have a, like a good life, set up your own business, you know, try and explain to them digitally. I'm like, you know, you see that picture you're drawing there. You can replicate that infinite amount of times and put it on whatever you want just by like a couple of clicks of a button, and you can earn money, and then you can do what you want. And if you want that Range Rover, or if you want to go on that holiday, or if you want to read this book, or if you want to do that, it's trying to show them outside of the lines that they're being drawn into.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guild of Dad show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts, along with topics and stories that will captivate you and impact your life. If you're a dad that listens on a regular basis or a long-time listener, then thanks for tuning into this podcast and the discussions we have. If you've only just discovered the podcast, then welcome. Look back through the back catalogue and discover a ton of other conversations. This podcast is for you, the dads that listen. It's you gents that drive me to succeed with Guild of Dads and the conversations that I have on this podcast. Your support inspires me to push on and lean into becoming the man and dad I want to be, knowing that I can pass on what I've learned to you. If you want to get involved, you can reach out to me on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. I'm doing quite a bit on Twitter right now, which I'm finding quite a lot of fun. Or also, just drop me an email to joe@guildofdads.com. Tell me a bit about you, where you are from and what challenges you right now. You can also join our rapidly growing free Facebook group. Over in there, you'll find a positive, encouraging community of other dads on life's journey. Currently, at over 200 courageous men from across the world. Guild of Dads' message is resonating. A message of personal growth and brotherhood and celebrating men and dads, along with the far-reaching impact we can have on society. I'm proud to be on this journey with you guys and leading this movement. So what do you get on this podcast? Each week, we deliver content and conversations that will expand what you think is possible for yourself, enabling you to positively impact yourself, all areas of your life, and the lives of those that surround you. We do this by speaking to fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs, ultra athletes, professors, psychologists, and also some ordinary dads just like you doing some extraordinary and impactful things. Every episode will give you either actionable resources to take away or a different perspective on a particular topic. These conversations are important and necessary because the world is changing. The role of dads and men is constantly under the spotlight, sometimes under attack. And my dream is to make Guild of Dads the go-to resource for dads like you who want to make some change in your life and live lives of vision and action. So what's this episode about? Conversations, podcasting, being a dad, hedgehogs, education, and much, much more. One of the popular misconceptions about men is that they don't talk, or at least they don't talk in the way that's expected of them. Reality is that men do talk. In fact, on certain subjects, we won't shut up. And when you throw three men together with strong opinions on different things, sparks will fly. We delve into these questions in today's episode with three podcasters. And that's what today's episode is about. The power of conversations and friendship. Today, I'm joined by Nathan and Bobby, Bobby and Nathan, who are two dads and also friends from suburban London, who a little while back decided they liked podcasts. They liked chatting, so why not start a podcast of their own? Their conversational podcast, Dads Who's Talking, was born, which regularly follows the journey of two friends navigating fatherhood and life with the stories, opinions and anecdotes they learn along the way. The result? Some really honest and insightful conversations which often turn very funny on the toss of a coin. I won't spoil today's episode, but suffice to say, there are some gems in there. And now, to my conversation with Nathan and Bobby. Gents, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much, Joe. Nice to be here.
It's a great pleasure. We've been sort of following each other on kind of Instagram, and you guys sometimes comment on my posts and I comment on yours. And I've listened to your podcast a little while back.
Thank you.
And I enjoy it because it's kind of very much sort of, it sounds like two guys that are kind of sitting in like a coffee bar or a pub or whatever, having a sort of chit chat and stuff. And I do like the way you don't kind of pull any punches, similar to me in terms of, no, we're being off limits sort of thing. But how did you guys first, I know I spoke to you, Nathan, about this before, that you kind of were into podcasts anyway, but what was the inspiration behind Dad's What I'm Talking About, which is the name of your podcast?
I started working at a company that Bobby was already working at, and we were literally sat next to each other like naughty school children.
We're just literally sharing a desk back together, and
pretty much like this, but the other way around. So
it was actually, yeah, we should have shut the original authenticity. But I think it came about because I was I'd met a girl, and I'd been seeing a girl for about 6 months who had a little boy, and so I was kind of learning to be a stepfather, and I knew Nathan had kids, and I ended up saying, "You've got kids. This thing's happening. What the hell do I do? I don't know how to handle this." And he was giving me like tidbits of advice and stuff.
Things that I have done and work for me. So yeah, that's kind of how it kind of started.
Stuff you've been through. And then one day he was always telling me he's into podcasts. And one day I said, "Look, you're always banging on about podcasts, boring everyone at work with all these podcast stuff." So I said, "Why don't you start your own one?" He said, "Well, I wouldn't know what to talk about." So, "What do you like?" I said, "You're good at being a dad. Do a dad podcast." And I suddenly went, "That's a really good idea. Can I do it with you, please?"
Because I also have the memory of us, we were sitting having lunch together in the sort of like little kitchen area, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And I just remember, so we were sitting down on these chairs with a table in between us. And then we were just chatting away, completely lost in our conversation about kids and being a dad and stuff like that. And then I just remember like sort of looking around and all the room was just sort of staring at us. And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's probably the most people we've had listen to us."
That was our highest audience, I guess.
that's kind of how it started. Yeah. Bobby, was sort of new to it. Like I spoke, you know what, that's what I said to him at the end, is that at the end of the day, we're all new to it.
Yeah. Well, I had,
that's it.
I had tried to start a podcast before with my friend, but it kind of petered out. It didn't really get going. We live quite far away and we didn't realize we could do it via online. But so I had a little bit of knowledge about how to start it off. So that kind of helped out a bit, didn't it? But then we just kind of just got into a rhythm and just kept going. And
we took things that we liked out of other podcasts. So like no editing. So we wanted it to be as easy as possible and as simple as possible. And we kept saying it's like guerrilla podcasting. So we literally would, we'll rock up, we'll sort it out, we'll put the mic down, we hit record and we talk about whatever comes up, or if there's any questions or thoughts or, you know, tactics or
kind
things
of a slice of reality we want.
Yeah, that was
an overproduced story that didn't or anything.
Yeah. And like you quite rightly said, we always wanted so that it felt like someone just happens to overhear a conversation, whether they want to hear it or not. But it is that kind of raw two people talking, or two dads talking about the trials and tribulations of trying to grow like small humans into decent big humans.
Yeah. And did you find, and you've obviously talked about kind of the kind of support side of it in terms of having someone else to talk to about the kind of going through being a dad and being a guy and whatever. Do you find that there's a kind of therapeutic element that you get from it in terms of actually coming away from it at the end of each episode and you're kind of like, actually, I feel better actually having shared that and talked about that and actually kind of unpackaged certain things that's going on in your life sort of thing?
Definitely. I mean, I don't know about you, but I think we've right from the start, we've been feeling like, even when, you know, sort of right when we first started and no one's listening, we kind of think we don't really care because we really kind of enjoy it. You know, it's kind of like you say, an offloading. Sometimes it's good to, you know, you obviously talk to your partner about stuff, but sometimes it's kind of just good to bounce stuff off another dad, another bloke, a mate, basically. It's a very different sort of wavelength than you're on with a partner. And I think it's really important. And I feel sorry for a lot of dads that don't have that, not just don't have a podcast, but perhaps don't have that blokey male outlet to sort of, like you say, to offload onto.
I think I've
always said from the beginning, it was an unexpected side effect of coming here. Like, we had a weekly thing, we do it every week, and whatever happens, you do end up like just chatting about things and you do come away feeling better. And it's almost like, regardless of what you talk about, because it is that thing when you're growing up, and like we just said before we start recording, like, you know, when you meet up with friends, you do that on a weekly basis or a daily basis when you're younger, and then obviously commitments and relationships get in the way and you kind of slowly lose that. Even though you're with that person who, you know, is the most special person in your life, there is something different about being with friends growing up and going through all the trials and tribulations that you kind of lose as a as an adult and as an adult man as well. You kind of, I always feel like women tend to hold on to their core of the like group. Like they always seem, women seem to like natter away, and but men don't seem to do that as much. And I think that I've found like every week coming here and, you know, going away from it, it's like, even if I can't remember half the stuff we've said, I still feel better because it's been, you know, like you say, you go through, you think through what you've either done or you're going to do. And it just seems to help, you know, it just helps. It's a good thing. I do. I've said it before. I highly recommend other dads doing it, either with a single dad or and someone else or a friend. But yeah, that is that thing, like you say, just being either in a group or with someone else just helped to think through or talk through certain aspects. Yeah.
And it's interesting because when I interviewed the best-selling author, John Gray, sorry, I just had to drop in that he was best-selling author. but he's the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. And he said that basically got men and women kind of interact in a different way anyway. So, and quite often what happens is when men tend to offload onto their wives about stuff, their instant reaction is it must be a problem with me. Must be a problem with me. So it's kind of, so I think it's good to have a guy to kind of bounce things off of. What do you think about this? You know, we hear it a lot in the pop media these days. Oh, men don't talk. And, you know, if you've ever been overheard two guys talking, you'll realize that that's kind of not the case at all. But in your experience, what do you think about this whole notion of, oh, well, men don't talk. They don't talk about stuff.
I think it kind of depends on perhaps on your background, but I think it's true in some cases. I grew up in sort of a rural farming background. And to be honest, yeah, the men out were real men. And I don't know if there's, well, I think there must have been a pressure. At some point they grew into this kind of manly paradigm, you know, and I'm pretty sure a lot of them didn't talk, you know, sort of farmery types, and they spend a lot of time on their own anyway. A lot of times they got no one to talk to except for, you know, animals. But I joined this, we talk about Dadsnet a lot, the Facebook group Dadsnet, and it's amazing through this sort of the guise of anonymity or certain amount of anonymity or facelessness that what guys will talk about online that perhaps they wouldn't talk about you know, in public to their mates. It was incredible, the honesty and the openness that comes out on there when you can just type it on a forum. So that shows me that there is a real year, even if men aren't talking, there's definitely a yearning to talk. And I think it's great that there is that outlet there to do that as well.
Yeah.
I think there's it also depends on your relationship as well with that person, doesn't it? Like I'm very lucky that I've got a core group of friends that I've known since I was about five. So, you know, it's a lot of time to be around that person. But even then, I still find there's like barriers to certain things that you perhaps just don't want to talk about. But it is becoming easier. I do agree with that. I do, like Bobby said, I think in that time, that is how men were seen and perceived, you know. And you sort of look at Victorian men, you just think, well, they're just not going to talk about how they feel. But I could be wrong.
I think attitudes are changing, really. I think it's becoming more acceptable. There's more of, obviously, mental health is much more out there and talked about a lot. And I think it is easier. I think it's probably the yearning has always been there, but now it's just easier for men to do that.
Yeah. I agree. I absolutely agree, actually.
Which is great, because obviously there's a huge problem with suicide, as we all know, among men. I don't know, I'm not an expert, but I would imagine that's probably at the core of it, not being able to, you know, talk about things.
Yeah, it's funny, the whole suicide discussion, because I'm reading a book at the moment by a gentleman called John Barry that's called Perspectives in Male Psychology, and it delves into suicide and the different reasons that often there are. Marital breakup is one of them, losing their job, redundancy, that kind of stuff. So there's a number of different kind of sort of leading causes. But like on my podcast, I talk about like meaning and purpose and life being kind of meaningful and stuff. And I think in the kind of modern world, we've got a lot of kind of material things that kind of we thought were going to make us happy. But I think rapidly guys hitting middle age are realizing that all the shit in the world is not really going to make you happy unless you're actually kind of got something a bit more deeper than that. And that's the kind of the soul journey that I think guys go on, I think, to a certain degree. But it's interesting in terms of kind of how, what guys are talking about. And I went for a drink with a couple of mates on Saturday night, and it was kind of, we jokingly sort of say, oh, it's funny, isn't it? Because in our 20s, we were talking about girls and cars, and now we're talking about lawn treatments and caravans and stuff like that. And
well, there's another podcast then.
Yeah, exactly. Look, yeah, girls and cars and lawn treatments and caravans. But it's
good name for the podcast.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's what's interesting is when I sort of see friends on a sort of social, the conversations, I think as you get older, I think there's a natural little bit more depth to them. I mean, you do the usual kind of, oh, to people talk about football or, you know, whatever film that they've seen on Netflix or whatever, and then that kind of sort of breaks the ice, and then inevitably it goes deeper. And then my wife will walk over and she was like, what are you guys talking about? And we're actually like it breaks your chain of thought because you're in quite a deep conversation, you know what I mean?
Well, I think it's also, it is part of that kind of, it is growing, isn't it? It is like when you're adolescence, you know, you don't give a shit, or you're trying, it's all bolster, isn't it? And you don't know who you are. You barely know who you are in your 30s, or I'll talk for myself. I barely knew who I was in my 30s. And even now I'm still finding out things about myself that, you know, my younger self would just be like, who's that dickhead? But you grow and you realize, like you've just said, you realize that you start talking about things that are actually important. You know, who cares about your car? Who cares about your wheels? You know, who cares about, well, I won't say caravan, but you know, it's that, it is that you realize that actually there are certain points and parts of your life that actually are actually really important, and things that you can talk about with good friends or a group of people and get opinions and help you kind of, like you say, unpack it and realize from different perspectives, actually I have got this right, or actually I'm kind of a bit lacking here. And you know, when you talk about cars and girls, it's like you say, it's quite one-dimensional, but when you talk about yourself, or you're trying to help a friend who's in need, or you know, you need a hand with something, it's that thing, it kind of, like you say, as you get older you realize that a lot of your barrier starts come down because you're more confident and comfortable yourself.
I met up with a friend who I hadn't seen since school, and we were like really good friends when we were like sort of like through our early teens, I would say, and late, well, all through our teens, I suppose. And we got kind of separated when he went off to university. I met up with him not long ago. I hadn't seen him for like probably 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's weird for two people who were best buddies. We met each other and realized we'd kind of grown, you know, evolved gradually into different, kind of the same people, but different versions of those same people. And it was weird. It was awkward. The conversation was stilted, and we kind of had to get to know each other again, but the people we are now rather than the teenagers that we were then. We were just talking about frivolous stuff like, you know, so when's the next night out? How many parties are we going to get to now? How many pints are we going to drink? And now I'm sort of talking about, God, mortgage interest rates are what at the moment, aren't they? Things like this.
But I think as well, also, I think by the time you hit probably 40 or later than that, you've probably had a few life events that will have happened to you, such as, you know, bereavements, or you might have had some marriage difficulties, or you might have had a health scare, or there'll be stuff that has kind of been a bit more of a leveler, which I think kind of gives you a bit more of a kind of, well, actually, it's just not all about me anymore. It's not about getting pissed every weekend and just like, you know, laying into 11 o'clock in the morning, because I can't do that as a 40-year-old man like I could when I was 18, you know what I mean?
Drinking the night before.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it does, I think your kind of life experience shapes the kind of sort of conversations you have. And I think that one of the things that was interesting when we had a quick chat before today's podcast, Nathan, is we were, I know you guys don't have anything that's kind of generally off limits on your podcast. And I think what's kind of quite interesting is that there seems to be an appetite for this kind of these kind of conversations at the moment, just because I think that the kind of mainstream has become so sanitized. And I'm sure that there are probably like occasions when you guys are talking and you're like, Bobby, I can't, I don't agree with what you're saying, but because you're mates, you can actually say that, respectfully, mate, I disagree with you, but we're still gonna be mates.
occasionally, most of the time, luckily we are. I mean, we're waiting for the day where we can really have a real
we'll get into it. But it's I don't know, we seem to I mean, I could be wrong, but I mean, we seem to agree on quite a lot of aspects of, you know, children raising, you know, dealing with certain aspects of things. But yeah, it's...
I think it'd be probably interesting to get someone on who's polar opposites to our sort of parenting style and our thinking. That would make it an interesting podcast.
And I'm fully up for that.
Yeah, it's all very well us agreeing all the time, but yeah, I think it's got a bit of conflict, you know. But what was I going to say about, oh yeah, about the mainstream becoming sanitized? I think that's a really, really good point. And I think it's why podcasts are so popular now, because it just takes all that away. You listen to some of the mainstream radio stations now, and oh my god, it's just, I don't know why they bother having different presenters. They might, they're all exactly
it's
the same,
homogenized, isn't it? It's homogenized snippets of brainwashing of what you think you should be told to hear. And when you hear something refreshing, like I said, I you know, most, as you, if anyone listens to the podcast enough, most of my snippets come from other podcasts, because my brain's just like, it feels like you're gobbling up new bits of information that seems so new, and you know, it challenges your thoughts and it makes you think about things. And you know, I'm not saying that we do that, but it allows you to, like you say, explore different sides of things that you perhaps hadn't thought of. And like you, I know we've spoke recently that to have someone that is almost in like polar opposite of how you think about things, and to try and see from their point of view without like getting the shit about them, is not easy. But
no, it's not.
But it's important.
Sorry, I think people are attracted to something that's real, something that's genuine, that's happening. Whether in any sort of form, really. I was trained as an actor, and one of our teachers at drama school would say, "You need to, if you look like it's not real, if you look like you're acting, people don't want to see it." She says, "Have you ever been at a play?" She says, "When something's gone wrong on stage, you realise something's got, and the actors know, and they're trying to work around it. All of a sudden, everyone's like, oh, here we go." That little moment, I think, is kind of what people are attracted to as humans, really. And we turn off if we see anything mundane. So that's kind of what we're, you know, everything, it's constantly going wrong on our podcast, you know. I think that's what we're trying to create. I hope that's what people will tune in for.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's important as well in this kind of day and age, because like you say, stuff has become quite vanilla, I think, in the mainstream. And the problem is that's not the way life is. I always tell people this, you know, this story that when I was a lad, you know, we used to, this is in the days of when you actually drove up to London on a Sunday, right? And my old man would, you know, we'd go up to London on a Sunday, we might go to Horse Guards Parade or whatever, and you know, you could still park in London. And we drove past Speaker's Corner on the corner of Hyde Park, and I remember my younger self saying to my dad, "Look, dad, why are those guys standing on milk cartons shouting at people, sort of thing?" And he explained to me, he said, "Well, basically, son, we have free speech in this country, and people can say what they want to say, no matter how horrible it is. We still fundamentally have free speech." That was in the kind of 80s. But now, sort of looking back, I'm sort of thinking, well, we kind of live in a time where, you know, podcasts are kind of reasonably unregulated at the moment. YouTube is slightly more regulated. Obviously, if you're kind of mainstream, it's a lot more regulated. But it's interesting that the time we live in now is very much, you can say what you want to say so long as it's kind of politically correct. But if you don't, if you're saying something which is kind of, you know, not so woke, shall we say, then people are kind of,
You paused before you said that, because that's what I was saying to Bobby before. We've spoken about a lot of stuff off before we started recording, believe it or not. But it's the self censorship that I have an issue with, and it's something that I kind of almost physically rebel against, because the idea of is what Joe Rogan says as well. It's like, you know, he doesn't think about what he says before he opens his mouth; he just says it. And like, you pausing before you said woke is like, even though it's a tiny fraction, it was still like, and that's why I struggle with things where I'm like, this is bollocks.
Yeah, because there's so many terms. You could say woke, you could say social constructivism, you could say critical theory. There's about 10 different terms depending on what day of the week that we're talking about it. So I have to kind of pick a term in my head then as well.
but it's like, you are right. It is this. I think it's the self-censorship that goes around that side of things, where people are afraid to say something in case they upset someone, when actually it's up to them to be upset. Mm-hmm. There's a brilliant video by Stephen Fry where he says about that. He's like, I don't go out to offend you. That's not my role. I don't want to offend anyone. But if you are offended, then that's something that you have to deal with. It's like the whole mm-hmm. sticks and stones thing, trying to get your children to understand that actually what someone says to you, it doesn't matter. Really?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to be taught anymore.
I think we're sort of, we're, and I'll probably segue into this next bit actually, in terms of kind of you guys growing up in a similar era to me, where you see things kind of going sort of thing. But you're right. We're in a sort of era where people are not kind of saying what they think, and that for fear of what the kind of reprisals are going to be. And I think that what's kind of weird for us that kind of grew up in the 80s sort of thing, it just wasn't that kind of, it wasn't that kind of world. But to your point, I think what you were saying was there is this victimhood narrative that if someone offends me, you know, microaggressions, I'm going to be offended by this or whatever and stuff. But the Stoics talk about in Stoicism, they talk about this in terms of kind of actually it's on you if you're offended. And I, when I say this to people, I had this conversation with the guys I was drinking with on Saturday night, because he said he's got a few ex-military guys on his team that he's running. He said that the guy was having a beer with, he said, I much prefer the working with military guys on my team, because they take 100% ownership of everything. And mm-hmm. and if someone's going to offend them, it's on them that they're offended, not on the person that's offending them. And he said, it's such a breath of fresh air in this day and age.
I'm just going to close the window, Joe, because we've got a college next door and now it's lunchtime and it sounds like feeding time.
I'll fill in. So one of Bobby's heroes, and also probably one of mine, is Jocko Willink. And yes. If you haven't, I don't know if you've read his like Extreme Ownership book. Like that, the core of it is that whatever the problem is, you take responsibility for it. If someone else has done something wrong, you take responsibility for it. And it like you just said quite rightly, that victimhood mentality, I don't know where it's come from. I don't know who's teaching it. I don't know why it's allowed to be so pervasive in everything. Just like, deal with your shit, sort it out. Like even Jordan Peterson says the same thing. He's like, deal with your own home first. Sort out your own house. And then worry about everyone else's, and then grow that sphere. But until you can take control of everything within your sphere and deal with it, I don't see how you have the right to be either offended or worried or, you know, telling someone else how to live their lives when you can't deal with your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ownership.
And his stuff is really appealing, like, and the same as David Goggins, and there's a few other guys that are very much, you could probably put Ant Middleton into that group as well, sort of what personal responsibility. But one thing that I've noticed with particularly guys of our age, when the penny drops on that kind of mindset, all of a sudden stuff changes in their lives as well. Like their bosses, you know, are looking at them and thinking, well, this guy takes ownership of, you know, he doesn't try and hide when he's made a mistake. He just says, right, I've done it wrong, and this is how I'm going to put it right. And the same in marriages, and the same, all of a sudden stuff starts to happen in guys' lives when they start doing this and buying into it really in a big way.
Do you think it's sad that that seems so refreshing today?
Yeah, I do. And I think it's part and parcel of a perfectionist. Like when we were growing up, you didn't have league tables at schools. The only decision that your parents had to make was which school is within walking distance, and for secondary schools, which school your brother or sister went to, and that was it. You didn't have league tables, so there wasn't this kind of perfectionist mindset of keeping up with the Joneses and I've got to send my kids to the very best school and whatever and stuff. And I think the problem is I think that in the last 30 years since we were at school, everything has been about perfection. It's parents vicariously living their unlived lives through their kids. And, you know, we're going to get him tutored to get him through the 11 plus and all this kind of, it's just never ending. And I think the problem is we've become like a perfectionist society, which doesn't take kindly to people making mistakes, but you have to make mistakes in order to kind of learn, and you have to be able to put your hands up and say, right, actually, I got that wrong. I got it completely wrong. But I think the problem is now, and you're seeing this in, I'm going to have a little bit of a rant here, but you're seeing this in kind of central government and local government and a lot of institutions. They're kind of like Teflon in the sense that trying to make anything stick because no one wants to be accountable. No one wants to say, right, the buck stops at me. No one wants to say, well, this is my fault. So what happens is, you know, it's and like if you try and ring your local council today and complain about something, you try and find the telephone number for a star or an email address. These institutions are set up to be kind of accountability averse. And I think this is the way society has begin to become structured in the last 30 years. So, which is why, in answer to your question, Nathan, I think that's why it's so refreshing when someone says, yeah, this is the buck stops at me if I've got it wrong or that's it. But this is what I will do to sort it out. You know what I mean?
I think you have so much more respect for someone when they just go, who's done this? Who's made this big mistake? So I go, that was me. No, I throw my hands up. That was my mistake. Rather, there's nothing worse than someone trying to slither out of something. It's just vile. And what can you do? If someone's, if you're really angry at someone this and they say, yep, it was me. I'm sorry. I'm going to sort it out. What can you do? So it takes the wind out the sails. It's got to be, it's kind of difficult for some people to do because they don't want to admit that guilt. But the second you do it, it just kind of that sort of pressure is just
dissolves.
Yeah, it just goes. That's one thing I try and teach my stepson because he tried to lie. He didn't lie that often, but he tried the other day. It was something he'd done, like who's knocked this thing over? And literally, he's the worst liar, or as all kids are that age. It's just like the most guilty look. He's like, not me.
Like, is he buying it? Yeah. Is he buying it?
You don't want to have done it. Just tell us. And it applies, one of those things that applies to children and to adults. And it's something that I think it could solve a lot of the problems in the world, really, if people just take accountability. Jocko Willink, as Nathan mentioned, did you see that thing where he talked about Joe Biden's speech when they pulled out of Afghanistan? He was said because Joe Biden was just blaming everybody else, blaming the Afghans, blaming the government, blaming the people that ran away, the army that deserted. And Jocko Willink did his alternative speech. So this is what I would have said. It was like, I made a mistake and this is my fault and people died because of it and people are in trouble because of it, but they will not be in trouble for long. Here's what I'm going to do to rectify that mistake. I thought it was so powerful, and that's why people were calling for Jocko for president as well.
Yeah. Quite rightly so, because
and the thing is, it's leading by example as well.
Yeah,
this is what I was going to say.
Because the thing is, if your commander in chief of your country is leading by example, then the trickle down effect of that is that sets the example to everyone below him within the hierarchy of the organization.
Bring up is that. And it's a big thing for me, especially as I've got two daughters. And it's not just that. It's actually for everyone. Where are the role models? Who's a role model nowadays? Who can you pick who's not a vacuous celebrity on TikTok or Twitter or Instagram? Who is the person where you go, that's the one? Like, I think we spoke about it. The youngest girl to pass all of the NASA's tests. And like literally it was like a fart in the wind. And then was it one of the Jenners happened to wear the skimpiest bikini? And like, that's the thing. But like, as a dad with two children, how do you go, no, don't look at that. Go for this because your life will be better. You might not have as much money or you might not be as famous, but like it, there are no people who are role models. There are no people going like, this is how you do it. Do as I do. Don't do as I say. Or whichever way around it needs to be. It is that I find it really sad that we live in a world where, like you say, no one takes accountability. No one says, or like you say, when the people do, they're like a shining beacon. Like, you know, straight away, Joe Rogan, Jocko Willink, all of these people who take responsibility of their lives, sort their shit out and deal with stuff and admit it when they're wrong. You're like, oh my God, that's such a breath of fresh air. Mm. Why? What's going wrong with society where people are just going, no, it's his fault. That's his fault. I didn't do that. Nothing to do with me. You got adults doing that. So then what are kids doing? And they're like, well, I just saw him do it, but he's just lied.
Yeah.
Blatantly.
Yeah. And it's important that point about do as I say, not what I do. Because like when I was growing up, my old man used to get really frustrated with my schools for that reason, I think. And you know, I'm not going to come on here and start bashing all teachers. I'm not going to do that. But in some respects as well, our school system set up this way as well, which is very much do as I say, not what I do. Right? I expect you to turn up with your uniform in order on time, to your lessons and not talk, not muck about, do as you're told, et cetera, et cetera. But then in my experience of being a parent of a secondary school age kid, a lot of school teachers aren't turning up on time. They're certainly not turning up prepared for lessons. And so, not all of them, because I'm going to give some balance here. I'm saying not all, but yeah, I think there is an issue whereby we're saying to kids, do as we say, not what we do. And this goes across society at the minute.
But if you look at how schools are run, they are completely outdated for the modern world. Completely outdated. Like they don't, apparently it was set up for factory workers. I don't know if that's how true that is, but apparently that's why they're graded A to D or whatever, because that was how fruit and veg and stuff was graded. Yeah. They sit in the rows they sit in because apparently that was how factories were set up. That's why Elon Musk took his kids out of school, because they weren't learning. They're not teaching you to think. They're teaching you just to like, or learn. That's the thing. And that's what I try and get my kids to do now. You know, what would you do? How would you sort it out? Don't sit there and look at it. You know, let's have some common sense.
More kind of open-ended questions rather than just what's the answer to this? What's the answer to this? Like textbook. I think that's the thing. I always try and sort of encourage creativity and grace, particularly when it comes to problem solving to my stepson. He'll come to me very often and say, oh, I can't do this or I can't do that. Rather than just kind of solving it for him or writing the answer or doing it for him, I'd always try to think, well, there's a solution here. You've just got to find it. Let's try and work it out, shall we? And very often he doesn't do it. But, you know, on one day he will. And occasionally, well, that's not true. That's maybe being a bit unfair. He does do it sometimes with a little bit, but he's only six, for God's sake. Just a little bit of sort of teasing in the right direction, you know.
But it is starting to instill in them, isn't it? That's
yeah,
what it is.
And sometimes when it works, it is. I think I'm pushing it a bit too hard sometimes. But it's so satisfying when he does that, when he sort of solves the problem, you know. That's what I like. It's great. It's great. It's one of the best things about parenting, I think.
And when I've interviewed entrepreneurs as well, they always say, look, the guys at the top of organizations are the ideas guys that are coming up with the, you know, the creativity and whatever. And then what they do is they pay very experienced people to do the accounting, to do the legal stuff for them. They don't micromanage and they just get them to do all of the other highly skilled stuff so they can concentrate on the idea stuff at the top. And all of these people in that kind of second layer, if you like, of the organization, they're kind of 10 a penny because the schools are turning out these kids but they're not turning out the creative ones. And so, you know, and you see these kind of stories of these prodigal kids that are kind of literally running seven figure businesses at 21. That's not a normal thing, but kids are being able to do that now. And the way they monetize it digitally, like for instance, when we left school, you know, you went and worked in a kind of traditional bricks and mortar business, but now kids are making money digitally or not. They're monetizing something that they've got expertise in, which to us we'd be like, that's like the emperor's new clothes. How'd you do that? Like, you know what I mean?
I'm trying to tell my children that that's what they can do. I'm like, you know, it's really bad to say this, but I'm like, you probably don't want to work for someone. If you want to have a good life, set up your own business. You know, try and explain to them digitally. I'm like, you know, you see that picture you're drawing there. You can replicate that infinite amount of times and put it on whatever you want just by like a couple of clicks of a button, and you can earn money and then you can do what you want. And if you want that Range Rover, or if you want to go on that holiday, or if you want to read this book, or if you want to do that, it's trying to show them outside of the lines that they're being drawn into. You know, like the other day, Coco, my youngest, who's six, he's like still learning to read, which is fine. So am I. But I didn't read her school book. Like, she's obsessed with spiders. She's 6 years old and she just goes on about tarantulas all the time. She loves them. My mum absolutely like shits a brick when she brings a book around, but but I was like, let's not read your homework book. Let's not read that. Let's read something that you're interested in, because so many people, adults I speak to, that like, I don't read, I'm not interested, I don't like it. I was like, it's because you're not reading the thing that's interesting. So I literally got her like giant tarantula book out. I was like, okay, what do these words say? And because it was interesting, it was like, it was a lot quicker and she got the words, and the words were bigger. And like, you know, I was like, that's because that spider is what? It's hairy or it's fast or it's scary. But you could see like the cogs were turning, like, oh, actually I can take any book and read anything. And that's kind of what I think kids also need, that kind of, because I was so afraid of reading stuff when I was younger.
I was too, yeah. I was intimidated by books, never really read. And as I said, and then I think I was 21 and I read my first book, which is really sad. But I just read some, well, I because I was so intimidated by it, I just read Harry Potter because I knew that was kind of a kid's book. I thought, I'll probably get on all right with that. Yeah. And I thought, well, it wasn't too bad. And then next thing, and then I went to the bookshop and this guy said, how old are you? I said, 22. I was like, you realize there's a lot better stuff than Harry Potter. I said, it turns out there was.
it is the intimidation of books. And trying to get children to realize that they can read any book and learn anything is a superpower.
Yeah. Because I think when we were, again, when we were growing up, you had the book person that came around to the schools and you had a choice of stuff. And there was an A4 sheet of paper, A4 sheet with an elastic band around it. And then you wrote your name on it. And what's funny is my eldest was researching something for school the other day. And she just obviously Googled it and find out better whatever. And I said to my wife, I said, can you remember when we were having to research stuff? And we had to basically go to the library, find an index card or whatever which it was referred to. And then okay, so I've got three books. And then you go to where these books were and then you try and find this subject in the index. And it'd say, right, so, I don't know.
Photosynthesis
is on page 79, and then you go to 79 and then there's no mention of photosynthesis in page 79, and you're like, oh, God's sake. And this would happen time after time after time. And so when I said to my wife the other day, Isla doesn't know how lucky she's got it being able to just Google this stuff, because we used to spend hours trawling through the index cards at Bromley Central Library trying to find subjects that we could write about,
Patience. We're going to sound so archaic to our children. So there's so many advancements in our lifetime that just in about in the space of 25 years, we were talking about having to go where I think my stepson was complaining because Netflix was taking 10 seconds to load. I was like, right. When I was your age, I had to get in the car, drive to town, spend ages looking around Blockbuster Video, pay the bloke £3.
No, that's only if the video was in.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Then I really want the new Die Hard film. Sorry, mate, it's out for 6 weeks.
Drive back.
Yeah, rewind the tape. Then fast forward it through 10 minutes of stuff. And then, and only then.
Yeah.
Gents, I'm going to jump into the conversation here very quickly. You've probably heard me mention that putting out a regular podcast involves a substantial investment of both time and money to make it happen. Guild of Dads isn't sponsored, and I'm 100% self-funded. So I've recently set up a service called Ko-Fi, which means if you like and appreciate what I'm doing with the Guild of Dads podcast and Facebook group, or even if you want to follow me on social media, then you can buy me a coffee to say thanks and support my work. Just head on over to guildofdads.com and you'll see a small coffee cup at the bottom left-hand side of the screen entitled Donate. You can also follow me on there, so I'll be posting updates and some other cool stuff just to let you know what I'm up to. Any of you guys helping to support the podcast and group by donating will get a shout out on both platforms as my thanks to you for getting behind what I'm doing. If you ever wonder how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on this show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives and transform into the men and dads they always wanted to be. So you'll be in amazing company. And now back to today's conversation.
So we're just going to seem, there's so many things. I always say that we're going to seem absolutely like dinosaurs to us. And particularly, imagine our grandchildren, good God.
How do you instill patience into a child that doesn't have any? How do you get them to be just wait, just stand there, just you have to wait your turn, or you just have to wait for it to load up, or you just have to have that kind of patience in life now where it's click, done. We say Google, done.
Yeah. We're going to have a night. When the night's starting to get dark now, when it gets in the middle of winter, we're going to have a night, a pretend power cut. I told her about when we used to have power cuts when we were kids and we didn't have any phone, electricity, internet. So we're going to have
a brilliant idea,
we're just going to go into the cupboard, switch the electric off from 6 o'clock, and we just, I don't know, play board games by candlelight, whatever we did a power cut, just have no, because I don't think they have I don't even know if at that age they have a concept of what really the internet, an internet connection is.
No, it's just expected, isn't it? Even as an adult, when you have a power cut, it's like, wait a second, I'm just going to turn the light on.
Yeah.
No, you're not. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's how it works.
You're going to read Jocko Willink by candlelight.
Yeah, exactly. Who wouldn't?
Exactly.
Lovely thing. Read it out loud.
But the other thing that I saw a few months back, which is really good, is Yesterday. Have you heard of this? There's a film called Yesterday, where basically, the kids can decide what you're going to do on that day. And the premise of it is parents are always going, no, we can't do that, no. And so basically, for one day, the kids can choose. And I think there's different rules. So it has to be below a certain amount of money. It can only be within a certain radius of the house to travel, sort of thing. Nothing that's going to cause the danger of death or whatever and stuff. So there's a load of stuff, but if you look out, I don't know if it's on Netflix or not, but it's called Yesterday, but it's very, very relatable actually. And we keep pondering on whether to do it. And then my wife's like, we're probably going to end up walking down the high street in like a chicken costume with like, you know.
have you ever tried a screen free day?
No, I've tried, but we talking of caravans, we've just recently got a caravan last week, and so I had to break to my oldest that there's not going to be Wi-Fi, and the data signal might be a little bit iffy.
Oh God, I can just imagine her face.
Oh, get in the caravan. Like, how do I connect your phone to this caravan?
You're saying something, but I don't know what you're saying. Like, you're telling me something that I'm not quite happy with. So how's this going to work for me?
My friend the other day he was getting a new car, but it was taking a while to come. So he bought a stopgap, like a cheap, like his mate was a car salesman. He bought one for like 50 quid, an old, like, I don't know, 20-year-old Renault Clio. And he said, we're just going to drive this until the new one comes. And his 10-year-old daughter gets in the car. And she's like, right, how do I connect my phone to it? And he's like,
you know,
no, this is just a car. This is four wheels, seats and a steering wheel.
It hasn't even got electric windows, love. You've got no chance.
It just like, could not compute, but it's a car. You know, that's what, no, it doesn't. It's got like a manual choke you have to pull out. Remember that?
Oh God, I love the manual choke. See, that's why I've sort of, when we drove to Germany and like, friends of ours, I've spoken about this before, but friends of ours were like, so, you know, what are your kids doing in the back of the car? I'm like, they're looking out the window. And his face of horror was just like, he's like, what, you're not going to give them any screens or anything? I was like, no, they're going to sit in the back and they're going to be bored like I was when I was a kid driving to Bournemouth and stuff like that. And we had the best time because it makes them talk, or it makes them sleep, but it also makes them talk and they are included. And I think anytime you put a screen in front of a kid, they're excluded. Mm-hmm. And they're in their own little world. They don't hear conversations and they're not brought into the family or not brought into the conversation, not brought into the group. They're always ostracized. Like, here's a screen, sod off over there, don't make a noise, which in some circumstances is fine. But I think for the most part, it's wrong.
I think that's a great idea going off, particularly in a caravan and being separate. How old are your kids?
Mine are 9 and 12. So they're getting to that ideal age where we've probably got another, I don't know, 5-6 years. It depends. How long it's going to be till they utter those elusive words, I don't want to go on a holiday with you anymore.
Yeah.
And exactly. How old were you when you told your parents you weren't going?
I hung it out as long as I could to get a free holiday.
Still going. You're still going, are you?
Free holidays in where you can, that's what I thought. Yeah.
I think I was like 16. They went to Tenerife as well. I was like, no, you're all right.
Really?
What, like?
Yeah. I reckon it was probably about 17, 18, something like that. So I remember the last time I went on holiday, it was like 18. It was kind of a little bit weird sitting with my mum and dad at dinner time in this hotel sort of thing. But But the good thing is like, so I said to my wife, I said, right, we're going to have to put the Scrabble in. We're going to put Uno in. We're going to have to put all this stuff in. And
such a good game. Like, my girls love it. They're really good as well. Because it helps them with strategy. Like, when they really want to stitch me up, they're like, there you go. You're like, oh, now I've got to pick up like 20 cards. And they love it. But it's that interaction again. Same with like dinner, no TV, nothing on the table.
Yeah.
Chatting, talking. I think that's what, I think a lot of that is also missed nowadays. I think having a cat, because when you kind of like don't give anyone any reason or chances to do anything else. So if you're in a caravan, you're in a caravan.
Yeah.
There's no Wi-Fi. There's like going to be like a little TV in the corner that doesn't get anything. And you're just going to be sit there to talk.
Have you got big question here, big caravan question. Have you got an awning?
Not yet. I've got to get that on order. So we're going to do like the maiden voyage is going to be next week.
Where are you going?
and we're going to go to Hastings. So that was so basically that's not too far from here, and it's kind of reasonably mainish road. So I'm not going to wrap the van around a tree or anything. Hopefully, so it's going to be all right. And then we can walk down to the front, and there's arcades and stuff. And I think there's a clubhouse as well. There's a clubhouse, really exciting.
Remember when I was we went on caravan holidays when I was younger, and I don't know why I was fascinated by the awning. It just made it sort of doubly exciting. And I remember we went on a holiday with my auntie and uncle as well, so they had a caravan, so two caravans, and both had an awning, and we kind of conjoined the awnings into one like mega awning in the middle, so you had like two caravans with a great like a marquee in the middle. I was so excited. I loved doing it. That's why I asked about the awning.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna set up an eBay alert for one of those and pick one up over the winter, because after this, when we go away, that'll be it for the winter until the spring, sort of thing. Yeah. So I'm gonna set up an eBay alert, get one of those. I'll probably just use the pop up gazebo that I can put outside just to get me by, sort of thing. So, but it's been a bit of an escapade at the weekend trying to get gas for it, because I think there's a shortage of gas cylinders or something dad problems, but I'm looking forward to it. We've ummed and ahed for about a year or two, and then this summer we were away and we were like, because again, a lot of dads will probably relate to this, it's expensive going away on school holidays for anything other than your main holiday. Yeah. Unless you want to remortgage your house, then it's kind of going to be quite an expensive thing for most people to do two or three holidays a year. So we've kind of looked at this as a way to at least go away the beginning of the summer. Maybe we'll fly somewhere in August or something like that. But it means that the outside of the main school holidays, we've got something that can give us cheap holidays, you know, within the UK sort of thing. So
it annoys me. I was having this conversation with my partner the other day. I said, why, when I was at school, you could go on holiday in term time. You filled in a holiday form and you went on holiday. I'm like, what's wrong with that?
So you still can.
You get fined now, don't you?
I would take that fine.
I think I'll probably...
The amount of the fine is probably cheaper than the amount of money you'd spend.
I think so. But is it just a fine, or are you black marked or something, or they come around and...
I don't think you're going to be arrested. I think if you rack up enough fines, you'll probably be taken to court as a civil matter to pay the fines. But you're not marked down, I don't think.
I'd like to know how much that is, though. Because my argument, and we spoke about it before.
You're always trying to break the system.
My argument is if you're taking them somewhere where it's like cultural, or you're going to learn something, or it's so... you know, different. I mean, like you say, taking them to Hastings, you probably would struggle arguing that point. But if you're taking them to somewhere like India or Thailand,
it's very offensive to people in Hastings. I'm sure there's plenty of cultural sites down there. I was thinking more like Vegas. I'm taking out the cultural sites. You got the Eiffel Tower.
but it is, I think, cultural things where they can learn and broaden their horizons. I don't see how you should be like vilified for it as a parent. I never found it. There's an amazing letter to a school when they decided to take their children out and take them to Australia or somewhere. It was somewhere amazing. And they were like, you know, they're going to sit in a classroom and learn this, or they're going to be engaged every day and meet the, you know, the local populace and try these foods and, you know, hear these languages and see this artwork and this architecture that you just don't get here. And I think that's, I have no issue with doing that for myself, and I would do it at a drop of a hat for my children.
Would you?
Yeah. If it meant it was a cultural experience that they learned something from, you know, my girls have been to, they're half Indian. So my girls have already been to India a couple more times than probably most adults. And I love that fact. It's not to boast. It's just more of a fact that they have had a cultural kind of bath, if you like, from a culture and people in a country that most people don't get to see.
I
love that. And you know, they're really well traveled. I think it's an important aspect of any sort of human development, I think.
Yeah, well, it's and again, it's kind of like, so what is going to be more enriching, watching DVDs for the last few days of term or just finishing a couple of days earlier? And I think to your point, I found one of my old contact books, but there's different schools used to call them different things, but you used to have your contact book, which had your timetable in it, and then notes that were exchanged between your parents and the teacher. That was the way it kind of worked. And I found one of mine a few years back, and my dad was going to ride across France on a mountain bike with a mate of his, and a mate of his couldn't do it at the last minute because I think the parents were kind of ill or whatever. So I remember like him and mum talking in the kitchen, and she was like, "Well, do you think he's fit enough to do it?" And the dad was like, "Yeah." So in the end, they came in and dad said, "Look, if we can get like permission from the school, do you want to ride across France with me on the mountain bike?" And I was like, "Yeah, wow. Sure." So and I found the note in my contact book that my mum had written. Mum or my dad, I can't remember, but they'd written it to my form tutor. And the form tutor had said, yeah, she'd replied and said, yeah, fantastic opportunity, have a really amazing time. And but she had the discretion to do that as a form tutor in those days. So, yeah. Do you know what
How
I mean?
Old
so,
you think?
I was about 14, 15 when I did that. So, and we did it over 12 days from sort of, from Dieppe all the way down to just south of Nîmes on the Mediterranean. So some of it off road, some of it on road sort of thing. So. But it was character building. It was character building, yeah. Especially when we sort of went off course and we found this. We got caught on these loggers' tracks through this forest, and the path had just stopped, and I was having to carry my mountain bike with the panniers on it on my shoulder, to get through this bit. And I just cried. I just really did cry. But it was good. It was good because we rode through the pissing rain. Scorching sun. It was character building, really good.
I always think it's always when it goes wrong that the adventure begins, because when everything is like all smooth and stuff, we spoke about this before, didn't we? When you're in a car crash, when you're doing 70 in a straight line, everything's smooth and everything's serene, and you're dealing with the knobs and you're turning up the heating, and then when the car's doing when you're doing 70 sideways, and that all of a sudden things start like changing drastically, and it's when like yourself, I rode down to the south of France on a motorbike, but it's when we was coming back and when it all went wrong and we couldn't find anywhere to sleep, that you have those experiences that test you a little bit and make you sort of start thinking. And love it. Yeah. What a great experience.
Yeah. It was good. And the one thing that always baffled me and always does to this day was riding along Canal Towpath, and you wouldn't see cars for like hours and hours and hours, and you wouldn't even see like canal boats for hours and hours and hours. And then there'd be like a hedgehog, just like hedgehog every now and again, just completely flattened. And you're like, that's got to be the most unlucky hedgehog in the world to get flattened. Yeah, I'm just going to decide to cross now. And go on.
I won't worry about looking left or right. It's fine. It'll be fine. Honestly.
Right.
God, amazing. But that's what I mean. It's. I think was that in France, you say?
Yeah.
I don't know the French word for hedgehog, weirdly. I think it's called a Harrison. I think so. Yeah.
Not even like with an accent.
I believe. Just Harrison. I might. Well, I dreamt it or something, but I don't know. I just thought I'd throw it in there. Just in case,
you need to look that. Not hedgehog.
Hedgehog. Le hedgehog. As most British hedgehog, people.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I just think getting your children to think, taking responsibility, not lying. Although I do enjoy it when their ass falls out and you're like, when you question them, they're like,
Animate. Hey Siri, watch French for hedgehog.
In French, hedgehog is hérisson.
Hérisson, there you go. See, I was right. I might have pronounced it slightly more British.
Yeah. Harrison.
I just wanted to go definitive in case anyone was doubting me on that one.
Yes, you say it so definitive.
I do feel better now.
See,
yeah.
There's like a
I was doubting lifted. Myself. Yeah. I'm sweating. Go on, God for that.
Harrison. we've all learned something today, haven't we?
I think
trying to instill those things into children and get them to think and know that they can learn anything is, I think, for me, and an endless curiosity is what I want them to have. That's what, like, take responsibility, be curious, be polite, stuff like that for me is so important. Like you say, having experience like that, just trying to get your friends to experience or understand what you did, just for you to come back to school and be like, yeah, I've been in France for 2 weeks and we did this. So many people don't get that opportunity.
Yeah. Just going back to the hedgehog, I had another thought on that. Sorry to press this issue, but do you think if someone was called Mr. Harris, if your surname was Harrison and you checked into a hotel as Mr. Harrison, are the French people going to hear, my name's Mr. Hedgehog? Maybe. It could be hilarious. Next time I go to France, I'm going to check in as Mr. Harrison.
Well, they probably say, well, monsieur, I can give you room number 10. It has a lovely bed of nails.
Yeah. Or Velcro.
Wasn't it on Bottom, the character called Dave Hedgehog, wasn't there? There you go. Maybe it was. Name was Dave Harrison.
There was.
The name of the French gym. I don't know. Anyway, I think we digress slightly. Sorry about that, John.
No, that's
a
burning issue. I felt I need to get...
But I think the other thing as well on experiences that you have, particularly, you know, there's a lot of discussion around this, particularly with boys and particularly the masculinity, is going through this rite of passage. And I think you need these experiences to get you that kind of rite of passage. And I think this is one of the things that you're seeing in a lot of things now, is father and son events in particular. There's not an equivalent for girls, which is one of the things that people with girls kind of struggle with. You can still take your kids camping, obviously, and do stuff with them. But I think in terms of the masculinity question at the moment, a lot of guys are saying there needs to be young men need to have, because again, we were one of the last generations that didn't have national service. And although I probably wouldn't have said it at the time, looking back, I wished we'd had that, to be fair. And I think a lot of guys of our generation would have benefited from it.
And I think the younger generations looking at, like, because I don't believe there's any consequences anymore for anything or anyone. I think that's why most younger generations are just disrespectful. I don't think there's any respect. I don't think there's any consequences. I think you see these little shitty children speaking to their parents, you know, giving them a load of mouth. And when I've said that to my children, I'm like, if I had spoken to my mum and dad, you're speaking to me, I would have got a smack in the mouth. And when I've said that to my eldest daughter before, I've said, like, you know, stop talking like that, warning. And I'm, you know, but I said to her, like, you know, you don't understand how lucky you are. I say lucky, I'm not sure if she's lucky or not, but I'm like, I said to you before, I'll tell another quick story, but I said, you don't realize how lucky you are. Like, my mum or my dad, first of all, even if I dare to, like, talk back to them about something, I would have got a smack in the mouth. Because
not literally in the mouth, surely.
Yeah,
somewhere
smack.
Else on the head. Or
in the mouth.
Really?
In the mouth.
They went for specifically the mouth.
Upside the head.
Wow.
Shut up. Bang. I'm not asking you, I'm telling you.
It backfired because they ended up spending a fortune on orthodontic treatment trying to sort his teeth.
They're all fake. But it led on. So once me and Hazel were walking to school, because I think, I can't remember what the story was, because she had done something wrong. Like, she's done something really bad. And I was like, right, what would you rather have? Would you rather have a month of no pad and no electronics, no screens, or would you rather have a whack? Would you rather me, like, smack your ass?
Like we used to get.
And, like, without even batting an eyelid, she goes, I'd rather have a smack. I was like, oh, okay. Why? I said, well, because it'd just be over and done with them, wouldn't it? I would have learnt my lesson and then I can carry on with my life. Instead of, like, grounding them and, like, not, it's a bit, like, wishy-washy.
Just clarify, we don't actually batter.
We're not advocating violence against children on this podcast.
But it's the consequence. I think it's the consequence, isn't it? Because if you do something wrong, like you said, crashing a car, you're like, oh shit. It's knowing that there's something on the other side of a decision or an action that actually might come back and haunt you or hurt you.
It comes up to teachers again. I wonder, because the respect, I don't know about you, Joe, we had like utter respect and a bit of a fear as well of teachers particularly. And there was no threat of violence or anything. But
it's an air, isn't it?
Yeah. And I don't know. I can't speak for all children, but it seems like from what I read on the news, teachers don't command that respect anymore. I don't know why gone.
Because if you've got a classroom of kids and they're like, well, the teacher's not going to do anything. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen?
Well, we knew nothing was going to happen. Still,
my teachers were like,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Still, some of mine, like, we knew that they were going to, they couldn't do anything to us, but God damn, it was just a look at this steely gaze and you just freeze. Pure terror from some of them. I don't know what it was.
But there was respect for that. You're right. There was a respect for authority. And I think the thing is you were scared that if your parents were called into this, A, you were scared of your parents being called into the school, and B, you were scared of being put on report. And if you were put on report, I can't remember what it was. I think you were excluded. And then there was a certain amount of strikes. So you had a certain amount of strikes before that was it. You were out, sort of thing. And so there was a kind of pathway to being, you know, out of school, sort of thing. So
sorry, we got off topic from the thing, but I so, like, I've got a really big Maori tattoo on my arm, and I got that for my 25th birthday for myself whilst I was in New Zealand traveling. And, like, Maoris, if you look at a lot of indigenous tribes, like you just quite rightly said, the boys to go into manhood normally have to go through something fairly horrific, something challenging to allow them to be men. So either going off into the wilderness and living by themselves for a week, you know, for the Maoris, it was having a tattoo literally dug out of your face or your skin, which is why I had mine at 25. That was my birthday present to myself, to sit there and have like an agonizing tattoo for a day. But there are those things. But I was just going to say, I don't know if it's gender. I don't know if like men and boys feel like they have to have that bond to, like, what does it give you on the other side? Does it show you, you know, self-resilience? Does it show you that, you know, you're, same thing, isn't it? Part of a tribe. It's how we started this conversation, actually. It's come around full circle. Like, when you feel like you're part of a tribe and you belong to something and you've proven yourself, you have more of a station, or you have a voice. And then you also know that you can speak to people and get that advice back.
Yeah, and I think as well, I think it meant from a mindset point of view, the door to adulthood has opened and the door to adolescence has shut behind you. And I think that, I think from a metaphor, like, I jokingly talk about chadults, which is people that I see of my generation who are basically still acting like kids, even in their 40s. So they're still like, you know, why can't my mum and dad just drop everything to have my kids at the drop of a hat? Well, because they've got their own lives, and, you know, and also going to parents for like financial support and stuff and that. So they're not really self-sufficient adults. They're kind of, they're like, well, I want to be an adult, but I actually want all the bells and whistles of being a kid. And, yeah. And you see a lot of people of our generation that are kind of like that, not just from an emotional point of view, but also a financial point of view. You know, like, I reached a point where, I was kind of actually, I'm not going to actually talk to my dad about quite as much of the stuff that is going on in my life as I used to, because I need to learn to start thinking about how I can deal with this myself. Not from a sort of self-flagellation point of view, but by that point, he was in his late 60s, early 70s. He doesn't need to be worrying about me quite so much. You know what I mean? So, but I know that some parents, like, I know some people of our age who are will quite happily walk in and say, or can I have that bottle of booze, or can I need some money, or they're shame, almost shameless about it. And I just cringe when I hear or see people doing that. I'm just like, just want to bang their head against the wall and say, just grow up, will you?
What do you think your answer is to that? Do you have like a thought, or have you been thinking about it? Do you think there's like a way to help chadults, which I love, like transition into being fully fledged adults that can, like,
I think there was a really interesting book in Ant Middleton's book where he talks about cutting his brother off. His brother was always very much sort of blamed everyone. I can't remember what the actual story of it was, but the long and short of it is his brother was very dependent on him, and he kept coming after him for money and saying, can I have money for this or money for that? And in the end, he realized it was doing his brother no good. So he just cut him off and said, right, no more money, no more help or whatever and stuff. But paradoxically, his brother actually respected him more, and it forced him to grow up by doing that. And I think the thing is I think sometimes we're thinking we've got to wrap our kids up in cotton wool in order to make them successful. But the problem is you end up with being a helicopter parent. I think you end up creating a chadult, basically, because your kid is never going to be able to do anything for themselves. Or, of course, you're going to help them. You know, of course, you know, if your daughter rings up and says, look, my boyfriend's struggling to put up the shelves in our new flat, of course you're going to say, no problem, I'll come over and show him how to do it. You know, no father-in-law would not do that for their son-in-law. But it's if your son-in-law is fucked up again and they can't hit the mortgage payment, and you're just like, and it's happened quite a few times, you know what I mean? It's that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's a slippery slope, isn't it? It's... It's those things, the same thing, isn't it? As you're raising your, I do say this often, actually, all you're trying to do is take a small person and turn them into a decent big person. And I know I've joked about this before when I've said, like, you know, if I came around Bobby's house, I wouldn't jump on the couch. I wouldn't, like, if he made me a dinner, I'm like, I don't want that. Maybe something else. I don't want that.
He does sometimes jump on the couch.
I do. But it is that thing, like, you're trying to teach these small people to turn into polite big people and to see a problem or a challenge and be like, okay, I need to think about how do I do this. Sorry, mate.
It's interesting you talk, I'm coming down the slightly more frivolous side of that conversation, but it's interesting you talk about the putting up the shelves and stuff. We've talked about this before, like the pressure.
I wonder if he was going to bring that up, actually.
Yeah, guys, there's kind of a expectation of guys to be just sort of naturally good at putting things up and DIY and stuff.
We've said before, there's quite a
pressure when I was putting some floating shelves up, and I swear, I never want to hear the word floating shelf again. I was putting them up, and our house as well, it was built in the 1920s. I think there was a lot of wars on there. They built it to survive a direct hit from a bomb. It's so solid, these walls, and the drill we had wasn't strong enough to get into the walls. But my partner's thinking, nah, he's just no good at this. He's blaming his tools. You have
to look at other options.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I do feel kind of a pressure when it's sort of DIY stuff. But I always manage to cobble through it. If you sort of really closely inspected my DIY, it's no way it's going to hold up to any buildings regulations, but it does its job.
You've embraced the whole thing, whereas I'm still a bit like... Ugh.
My most proud moment, I fixed a hole in the roof, which sounds, that sentence sounds extremely impressive. However, it's not really, because it was more like it was a crack, but enough for water to come dripping through. So I thought, I'm sure there's a better way to do this. You probably have to get scaffold and get on the roof. I just got some of that sealant stuff you get in the gun in BAQ, went up into the loft, sealed it up. 2 years now, I have officially fixed a roof, Joe. We haven't got any leaks or anything. As I say, any builder get up there, they wouldn't be impressed. But as far as my partners are concerned, I'm all man.
But you've got a magpie. You've got a magpie like grip filled to you at the top of your house now. Yeah. I see anything a dead magpie.
I'm literally putting a roof over our heads. So
No, as I say, following on from that, I've actually spoken to my brother about getting me either a two-stroke engine or a single-stroke engine. I'm just going to get it. I'm going to dump it on a desk, and I'm going to get the girls to take it apart and work out what tools to need. Because apparently, like, a single-stroke engine is a fairly simple thing. But getting them to think about things, like, again, going back to, like, what Elon Musk has done, he's taken his kids out and set up his own school called Ad Astra, because he said they're not learning how to think. It's such a stupid thing, but it's such a thing that we kind of take for granted as we get a bit older.
Ad Astra, what does Ad Astra mean? It sounds like a...
To the stars.
Oh, it sounds like something you order in Wagamama. I'm sure it's like a...
it's Latin.
Italian dish or something. No, it's Italian. I'm sure it's Italian.
It means to the stars.
Oh, does it? Oh, okay.
But yeah, I'm always, you realise there are like gaps in education that you're trying to fill as a parent, I suppose.
Yeah.
You want them to be free thinking and creative and curious, and
I like this. I like someone I know says your job as a parent is to make yourself redundant.
Yeah,
and I like that because basically what you're doing is showing how to do stuff, so you don't have to show them the next time how to do stuff. And
it is that thing, isn't it? It's being the example for your children. Like, I actually want to be like that. You aspire to be a bit like your dad or a bit like your mum, which is, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I'm very lucky that I come from that kind of a family and a household where I've got a big family. You know, my parents are very supportive, but it is, you look at your parents, you're like, well, you know, I like that about my mum or dad. You know, I like that about my uncle or my nan, and to have these role models in your life. But it's literally what you should be. So if all kids see is this, then it's like, what are you showing them? What are you telling them? What are you teaching them?
Yeah.
Now, I had that, we spoke about it before, but, you know, my phone went off when I was chatting with my girls over dinner. And they're like, oh, you're not going to get that? No. Why? Oh, because your phone went off. I don't care. It's not important. Because if I do that, it means that phone is more important than you. And that's, what does that tell you?
When I was a kid, my dad obviously didn't have mobile phones, but if the phone would ring when we sat down at the dinner table, it's like, and I don't know, if I was expecting a call, I'd go up to get it, be like, no, that's it. No way would anyone get up to answer the phone from the dinner table. He was staunch with this. And at the time, I remember thinking, bloody hell, this is a little bit over the top. But no, I've grown into the sort of the similar sort of adult. I'm exactly the same. We sit down to dinner, our phones stay in the other room. No one has a phone on ringing mode anyway, do they now?
But it is that thing, isn't it? Like, there's no distraction from family time. When you sit around that table together, your attention is on who you're with.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it should be like that when you're with your friends as well, going to a pub or something. You know, I've seen people where they put a stack of phones in the middle of the table. You know, so that's where our phones are. We don't have to look at them when you're talking. And if it goes off, the first one to touch it, like, pays for the round.
I thought it was one of those parties where you all put your phones in the middle and you pull up someone else's.
That's a Channel 4 documentary and a half, yeah. That one is. But no, it's interesting you say that, because funny enough, I was talking to someone about this a couple of days ago. I've been to Madrid a few times for my anniversary, but also on some dad's weekends to see the finish of the cycling tour of Spain finishes in Madrid sort of every other year. But we went out once up to sort of where the old town is, and you go into the tapas bar and there was loads of seated tables and stuff and people chatting in this little one, and you can get a glass of wine and some tapas or whatever and stuff. But after a few minutes, I think I was with the guys and I said, do you realise that I've not heard a phone go off at all in here? And then you suddenly look around you and there's not any phones on any tables. There's no phones in sight, and people are just sitting there like chattering away sort of thing. So I think it is a cultural thing as well across in different countries. I think some countries are better at it than others.
Yeah. Their cafe culture is amazing. And like you say, when you see people like engaged and looking at each other, there's in one of Tim Ferriss's book, he says like to do this, not the stare challenge, but to actually look someone in the eye when you're talking to them. That's another thing I'm trying to get my girls to do, because they will literally like look around I know I've got a big head, but they will literally like look around and they're talking. I'm like, no.
It's mostly hair.
That's true. It is mostly. It's like it's a little like slot here, but like I'll come down to their level. I'm like I'm a big person, so I'll come down to their level. I'm like, no, look me in the eyes and talk to me. And it's such a confidence building thing. But it's you know, like you say, when you go into those places, you're like what is different about this? And like, because you're so used to people being like, oh yeah, sorry, Adam, what was that? Sorry, what? And
didn't you say in Japan it's on public transport, apparently? Yeah. It's a real big faux pas.
It's a no-no
to ask for a phone on a mobile on a train.
They got stickers on the windows on the trains, and that like no one is on the phone, no one. And then when I was over there, I thought it was an American guy who was on his phone, just had to do like rah, 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 and like you just sort of
doesn't sound American.
You know, well, yeah, it's a dialect. It's the sort of thing in like zombie movies when all their heads like turn to face the person that's alive. It was like that. Everyone was just like, you know, when someone's like boring a hole in the side of your head, just like glaring at you. It was like that. It was like, I got to go.
I love that.
It was it's so refreshing.
There's a whole generation of people that have never seen the mobile phone guy on Trigger Happy TV, and you're like,
yeah.
I think that every time I'm on a train, I think to myself, I'd love just to get up, get a massive great phone and just do a Dom Jolly at the top of my voice. Because it seems to have escaped a lot of people now. And it's when you're walking around supermarkets and people do it as well. They've got all of their hands free, but they're video calling, or they're doing it with like on speakerphone or whatever. And you're like, do you want me to get semi-skimmed milk, darling, or skimmed milk?
Yeah. So I have my pet peeve is one above that, which is when the parents have just given the phone to the kid and the kid's just like mindlessly looking at a screen or flashing images somewhere. Again, that's my own pet peeve. But you are right. When someone's like, no, I can't find any broccoli. You're just like, oh my God. And like now someone's allowed it on the underground as well.
Yeah.
So you just get someone sitting next to you and like, yeah, no, I know. Dave, honestly, Dave, I've got a deal done. It's done. It's a done deal. Hold on.
When I used to get the train into work, it's half an hour to get into central London. And there was a guy every morning. You know, you tend to sit on a commute, you tend to see the same people. And literally, he was talking to his wife on FaceTime from the moment he got. He'd walk on the train, talking to her like this, sit down, talking to her the whole time on the train, and then he'd get off the train talking. I was like, God, just have a little bit. I mean, we all have love our partners, but it does you good to have a little bit of time.
Love you. No, you say goodbye first. Love you.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you go.
It's been a wicked conversation, guys. I'm gonna have to bring things to a close, otherwise we will probably go for the rest of the day, to be fair. We'll definitely have to do a mark two. Guys, your podcast is called Dad's What I'm Talking About. Where can people find out about you, or ping you a DM, or link up with you, or shout you some abuse for the dross that you've spoken on this podcast? Yeah,
we're just grateful for any correspondence, to be honest. So yeah, abuse is fine. You can catch us on Instagram. Where do you remember the handle on Instagram? Dad's Talking Podcast.
Yeah,
it's the easiest way to send us a message. We do have an email address, but not a single person has emailed it. We just gets full of spam. So it's just easiest on Instagram. And you can get us on wherever you get your podcasts. You know, so we're on everything. So we'd be very very grateful if you came and listened to it.
Excellent. Now, last question I'm going to pose for each of you individually is this question. I don't prime any of my guests for this, and it's a bit of more of a deep one, so you would appreciate it. I'm going to go with Bobby first. Bobby, what is it in life that gives you meaning?
Gives me meaning. I would say it's kind of, it sounds really bad, but it's kind of performing, really. I've set out my whole career was about, you know, started off as an actor, moved to be a stand-up comedian, YouTube host, and now this as well. It's kind of the only thing I've really enjoyed doing and felt that I've been good at doing. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's that. It's sort of basically showing off. I'm a dreadful show off. That's kind of my meaning in life, which sounds pretty abhorrent, does it? But I just like sort of, I don't like sort of really particularly sort of been out there and upsetting people. I just like to spread a little joy. That's what I said. I went to be a stand-up comedian. It's a very nice thing just to make people laugh. It doesn't happen every time when you're a stand-up comedian, sadly, but I think that's what gives me meaning.
All right, love it. You've had about a good 60 seconds to think about what your answer is going to be now, haven't you? So
mine's going to be like a bit, it's not intended to be for like anything other than the truth, which is I have loved being a dad. I love being a dad. I don't know what it is. I don't know what I get out of it. I get so much out of it. You know, just there's absolute moments of complete joy. It's a whole spectrum. It's a bit like acting, I suppose, isn't it? In a little way. Like there's a whole spectrum of gambit of emotions that you go through of, you know, complete joy, utter sorrow, you know, the failures when you see them, you know, crushed and then you see them like get something I don't know. I treasure and cherish being a dad. I love it. And it's kind of that thing, like you've just said, it's the thing that you found you're good at. Mm-hmm. I haven't ever really felt that until, I mean, I might not be a very good dad, but I it's the thing that I feel like I'm good at, you know, and I will gladly give my very specific advice to different people, which I think might help their situation with their children. But mm-hmm. I love being a dad. Yeah. It gives me everything I always want.
I love it. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on here today. And it's been a real good laugh as well. So the listeners are going to get a different flavour to today's proceedings. So,
Really, really appreciate it, though,
Joe.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Likewise. My name, go, gents. A big thanks to the guys for joining me on this episode. It was a lot of fun and one of the most exciting episodes I've done. I loved it. So, three men talking. The sanitization of mainstream media, victimhood, personal responsibility, role models, how our kids will earn money, caravans, hedgehogs, life being an adventure, why some parents need to grow up, and the importance of family time. It was all in there, but it illustrates the depth and breadth of topics men talk about, worry about, and are passionate about, with the characteristic humour synonymous with the Dads Who's Talking brand. What do you reckon about some of these subjects? Are they things that you speak to people about, other dads about even? Or are we just being miserable old gits reminiscing about the good old days? If you want to link up with me, you can do so on Twitter or Facebook using the handle @GuildofDads. Let me know what resonated about this episode. Did I mention that you can now buy me a coffee on my website, guildofdads.com? It's really easy and helps keep the lights on here at Guild of Dads Towers. Just head on over to guildofdads.com. Click on the coffee cup button and go for it. Those of you that donate get a shout out on here and in the Facebook group. Now, in order to have a positive impact on the world, which is what I'm all about, we improve ourselves and inspire others. Share this podcast with others so that they may benefit from anything you have found useful or interesting. If you make a point of sharing Guild of Dads with friends and relatives, it means that it can grow, expand and help many more men just like you. The other thing you can do is leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, which really helps other dads to find the podcast. Right now, the Guild of Dads Facebook group is growing fast, very fast, in fact. If you want to get on board, head on over to there and join up today, where you can get around a lively group of other guys talking everything about being a dad and improving themselves as men and dads. Hopefully, you find something insightful in every episode, so share with dads you know. In the meantime, live a life of vision, action, and meaning. Apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.